updates to our status of basin plan amendments.
Good morning, Chairman Norton and members of the board. Shall we wait for Mr. Hales?
No, he actually asked that we move forward. He was just going to step out for a moment, okay. So he'll be right back.
Okay, my name is Alita Mangelsdorf. I'm the senior environmental scientist in charge of basin planning here at the North Coast Board. Jeremiah Puget is also an environmental scientist in the basin planning unit, started in January, and he and I are going to give you an update on our groundwater protection program and a proposed basin plan amendment that we are working on. So these are in your agenda as items 8 and 9. We're going to give a combined presentation since it's two phases of the same project. The goal of the amendment that we're working on for groundwater protection is to better support the activities of our permitting and site cleanup staff when issuing permits and orders for the protection of groundwater quality, and also to provide greater clarity and transparency to dischargers and the public regarding our groundwater protection program. So today I'm going to give you a brief overview of groundwater in our region, discuss the regulatory background within which we're developing this groundwater program for our basin plan, the basin planning approach that we've been following, and the phasing of this project as phase one to address water quality objectives and phase two to address groundwater policies and action plans. And then we'll discuss next steps for each of these phases. This is a project that's been underway for a few years now. Lauren Clyde in the Basin Planning Unit is the lead for phase one, addressing water quality objectives. Jeremiah Puget is taking over the management of phase two, addressing policies and action plans. And I lead the Basin Planning Unit and always available to answer questions on basin planning. So I'm going to start with just a quick overview of groundwater in our region. We have 62 groundwater basins, and these are all designated as to be protected for municipal supply. Not too long ago, the USGS, Department of Water Resources, and State Board undertook a joint project to study the groundwater wells for the interior and coastal areas of our region as part of their priority basin study. And I wanted to tell you a little bit, just a quick summary of what it is that they found. They did detect in a subset of the 58 wells that they sampled some VOCs, pesticides, perchlorate, trace elements, nitrates, and radiation. But only arsenic, barium, boron, and iron were above the MCLs, which is the drinking water standard established by the Department of Public Health. And those are naturally derived. They're part related to the geology of the region. Nitrates are approaching MCLs in a few of the wells of these 58 that were studied. But the bottom line is that the groundwater basins in the North Coast region are of very high quality. There's some indication that there's anthropogenic influence in the form of VOCs and pesticides and such, but nothing that is presenting itself as a concern for human use. Something to keep an eye on, of course, will be nitrates, as indicated in that last bullet. This is a map of the region with those groundwater basins identified, and one of the main things I wanted to point out with this map is that we have 62 groundwater basins. That's a lot of basins to be evaluating and developing control programs for. But if you look at the map, they're very widely spread across the region. And the truth is that most of the groundwater that's used domestically and for agricultural purposes is coming from areas outside of those groundwater basins. We have a lot of domestic and agricultural use from shallow groundwater in this region, and shallow groundwater is also an important source of cold water in many of our perennial streams, and that cold water being important to the species that live here, including the some of the threatened species that Charlotte was talking about. Another main point is that we have usable groundwater throughout most of our region. This is unique to the state, that we have high quality water in this region. There are many places, Region 5, Region 3, where their groundwater concerns have risen to such a level that, that now there's concern about human use of them, and that's not the situation we currently face here. We do, however, have a number of individual contamination sites. We have sites associated with leaking underground storage tanks, wood treatment facilities, dry cleaning operations, unlined landfills, and other similar facilities. And so one of the things that we are looking to address as part of a phase two that Jeremiah will talk about are establishing or recognizing the controls that we use for the discharge of waste to land. We have a pretty incomplete understanding of shallow groundwater quality in our region, and because it is so widely used, especially for domestic purposes, this has risen to the top as a really important thing for us to better understand, better study, and develop proactive controls for. So the regulatory background within which we're working, this is a list of policies and plans that guide the development of our groundwater protection work. Starting with the anti-degradation policy in 1968, we have our own North Coast Water Quality Control Plan, which is developed in the early 70s and has been revised multiple times since then. Sources of drinking water policy, which essentially defines all of our groundwater as potential for use as drinking water. We have a statewide policy that describes the policies and procedures for the cleanup of contaminated sites. This is the policy that essentially describes background as the presumptive cleanup criteria for groundwater contamination sites. We have a state implementation policy for the National Toxics Rule and the California Toxics Rule, which is designed to protect surface water, and so where there is a nexus between groundwater and surface water might come into play. More recently, we have the recycled water policy and the on-site waste treatment system policy, both of which will come into play in phase two of this project, and Jeremiah will talk about. So this project, Groundwater and Surface Water Quality Objectives and Implementation Plans, includes both substantive and editorial changes. We're doing a lot of work in Chapter 3 of the Basin Plan, as well as Chapter 4, and this is an opportunity to make the editorial changes that we've been interested in doing for some time now. This project showed up on the 2008 Triennial Review Priority List, was confirmed again in 2012. We began the work in 2009 and have held public scoping meetings in 2010, and that was the point at which we split the amendment into these two phases. Phase one to focus on an update to our water quality objectives, and phase two to focus on implementation measures. So as I say, we have proposed changes to both chapters 3 and 4. For phase one, the primary changes are in chapter 3 with an accompanying policy that would be inserted in chapter 4. The primary goal of phase one is to update the objectives to better harmonize the basin plan with state cleanup requirements as well as the requirements for waste discharge permitting. We want to update the chemical constituents objective, which is very old, a couple decades old now, add a groundwater toxicity objective, which would be a narrative objective, and then clarify the process that staff uses when translating narrative objectives into numeric criteria for permits and orders. And we're calling that the narrative translation policy, and that's the piece that would be in Chapter 4 as an implementation policy in support of the water quality objectives. Phase 2, then, would focus on changes in Chapter 4. There's a number of revisions, reorganization, and updates we'd like to make. Want to add a waste discharge prohibition, add an implementation program for the discharge of waste to land, including elements associated with the state's recycled water policy, and add the on-site wastewater treatment system policy. Or I should say, revise our own OTS policy by incorporating elements of the statewide policy. So this is the point in the presentation where I'll turn specifically to what's on your agenda as number 8, is phase one. which is an update to our water quality objectives. And the purpose of this amendment is to harmonize the basin plan with our state requirements. Our staff, cleanup and permitting staff, have been for many decades in the business of writing orders and permits for the protection of groundwater and have been following the statewide policies. But those, the process that they undertake when developing criteria for cleanups and for waste discharges is not well documented in the basin plan. So the concept of this amendment is to bring our basin plan up to date with the procedures that staff actually follow. The existing water quality objectives in Chapter 3 of the Basin Plan include numeric chemical constituent objectives. They're an outdated subset of MCLs, and they're identified specifically for the protection of the municipal and domestic drinking water supply beneficial use. But associated with that table is a footnote, which indicates that when appropriate, we will sometimes apply more stringent criteria and policies. And as it turns out, we rely on that footnote more often than not when developing permits and orders. Rather than using MCLs for the protection of MUN, there are other beneficial uses that we are sometimes compelled to develop criteria to protect. We also apply, in applying the statewide policies, for example, the cleanup policy, which describes natural background as the presumptive cleanup criteria, rather than an MCL, we'd oftentimes find a numeric criteria that better supports that statewide policy. So the proposed revisions to the water quality objectives include updating those chemical constituents objectives so that they're designed to protect all beneficial uses, to ensure that the MCLs that we reference in the basin plan are the most recent published criteria and are don't become outdated, you know, in too quickly in the next couple of years as the Department of Public Health updates them. We want to add a groundwater toxicity objective to better support the identification of the most appropriate and protective criteria. Staff have been developing numeric criteria based on the concerns of groundwater toxicity, but do that on a case-by-case basis. So the addition of a narrative groundwater toxicity objective would just simply lay out that this is something that they do regularly. And then add a narrative translation policy to more transparently describe the logical process that staff uses when they're identifying protective criteria. We held a staff workshop on a draft proposed amendment last year in February and received public comments in March. And based on those comments and testimony during the workshop, staff has worked most of last year on revising the proposed basin plan language and revising the staff report in preparation for what we had hoped would be a hearing today on the proposal. Also last year was a court case being settled in region or being decided in Region 5 that had to do with the question of prospectively incorporating MCLs into a basin plan and whether or not that was legal. The decision came out in November, and Region 5 won on that point, meaning that the court decided that MCLs can be incorporated into a basin plan and incorporated prospectively, meaning that any future iterations of any future updates to the MCLs are automatically then part of the basin plan. And so that had been one of the issues that had come up in public comments and that we had been stewing on as finding an alternative way of addressing our interest in referring to MCLs, but doing so without having to update the basin plan regularly to keep pace with the Department of Public Health. We released a proposed amendment and substitute environmental document in February of this year for public review. As I say, we had the intention of coming to you for a decision today. We met with the commenters from last year to describe the changes that we had made and explain the changes that we had not made and why. And then we received public comments in the middle of April, and those comments indicated that there's still some significant concerns. So we've decided to pull back from your decision at present and to spend some more time with the basin plan language and the staff report until we're sure that we have a strong and solid document to bring to you. Here's sort of a summary list of some of the issues that came up in comment letters from the stakeholders. Concerns about prospective incorporation of MCLs. Concerns about a general chemical constituents objective. We had at one point proposed that rather than having a specific list of numeric criteria, which were a direct reflection of MCLs, we would instead just incorporate as a general matter Title 22 and the MCLs that they developed. So there's concerns about that. Concerns about the narrative translation policy that we proposed be included in Chapter 4. Some questions about beneficial uses. Some interest in revision of water quality objectives other than chemical constituents. And some interest in revision to the language in the basin plan related to anti-degradation. And finally, a number of comments on the CEQA analysis associated with this project and the 13241 analysis associated with the project. 13241 is a section of Port of Cologne, and it directs a series of considerations when adopting water quality objectives. So this is what we propose be the next iteration for phase one. There are some technical issues we need to continue to address, as well as legal ones. In terms of technical issues, we want to further refine the proposed basin plan language to more clearly articulate our approach to implementing anti-deg, statewide cleanup requirements, protection of drinking water sources, and others. One of the clear indications from the comments we received is that we've not yet reached that hurdle of being as transparent and clear as we'd like to be. Our work plan for basin planning for this year intended us to be done with this project as of a hearing today and move on then to other projects on the triennial review list, including the adoption of a region-wide DO objective, which has been on the triennial review for some time. So by postponing our ability to bring this project to you for consideration, we're thinking about potentially adding in dissolved oxygen into this phase one, since we're focused on Chapter 3 and revisions to water quality objectives as a way of more efficiently using our basin planning resources. So we're muddling through the efficacy of that idea. And in any event, we will, the next time we do come before you asking for a decision on phase one, we will also have the editorial revisions to chapters one and two before you for a final blessing before we send the whole package then onto the state board. Some of the legal issues we would need to address is we had developed our CEQA analysis for this project as a neg-dec level CEQA analysis based on the theory that really what we're doing with this basin plan amendment is putting into language a policy procedures that staff has been using for many decades. So our baseline is what we've been doing for all those decades. And as a result of the comments we received, it's become clear that what we really need to do is something more like a mitigated neg-dec level CEQA analysis. And so that is what we'll be focusing the bulk of our energy on this year. We also need to update our 13241 analysis to better reflect that expanded CEQA as well as the economic analysis. So we'll spend the summer and fall of this year revising the documents, the basin plan language, and the substitute environmental document. We'd like to hold a workshop in the winter and release documents for public review and comment late winter and then a board hearing in the spring of next year. So that's it on phase one. I wanted to stop for a moment and answer any questions you might have on this phase, and then I'll turn it over to Jeremiah to talk about phase two.
Great. Any comments or questions? Mr. Corbett?
Yeah, I had one question. I didn't quite catch where you were going on the baseline and what your approach to that was and how that's changed. So could you just explain that? It zipped through pretty fast, and I was trying to hear. Didn't quite catch it.
David, would you like to help out on that question?
Sure. Well, I think I will try to answer this question very delicately because I would like to preserve our argument on the record that what we have done for CEQA as an existing neg-dec level SED is still legally adequate, but we have received a number of comments that have raised various issues to make us rethink whether or not our argument that we are relying on a regulatory baseline is sufficient. I guess the argument there is that what we're doing is just trying to, trying to harmonize the basin plan with what we already do. So the argument is that we have a regulatory baseline that is going to be the same if the board was to adopt the basin plan amendment. So there won't be a change in the regulatory baseline. So that's the legal theory that led us to develop a neg deck level SCD. Now, I guess in response to some comments, have raised some various issues, and so kind of out of an abundance of caution, we've taken a look at our CEQA analysis and determined that although we think that that's a good theory, it may be good to add an additional level of analysis to make the SED more of a mitigated neg deck level document. I don't know if that.
I need to take this offline, but you know, we have the 20% above natural background receiving level, and we've always interpreted that as 20% above whatever it started, and the basis for that is, practically speaking, you almost can't measure the other, and so you end up potentially in a unenforceable situation. So there's some reasons why we did certain things. It may be a different issue, but anyway, I'll take that up offline. The second thing is, you mentioned there were requested changes to our water quality objectives that maybe weren't relevant to this. Did any of those have merit, and what were they?
Yeah, they certainly had merit, and they're based on projects that are either happening in another venue, like, for example, request that we develop new bacteria objectives, which is something that the EPA has now done on the federal level, and the state board is now undertaking on the state level. And so it had always been our plan in basin planning that we would wait for the state to do their work on bacteria. So issues like that, they were reasonable issues, but they were questions that were not folded into this particular amendment for reasons.
It might be good if somebody just have a memo so that we know what they are.
We have a response to comments document which outlines all of our responses to those questions, to that particular question as well as all the others. If this is a particular topic you're interested in, we can write a separate memo.
And then you mentioned there was a desire to amend the anti-degradation regulations, and what was the gist of those comments?
The comments were on the language as it's written in our basin plan, so not specific to the anti-degradation policy itself, but how it is articulated in our basin plan. And so there was a number of suggestions. What we decided on that particular series of comments was that it's perfectly worthy exercise to review our anti-degradation language and confirm that it accurately reflects the anti-degradation policy adopted in 1968, but that would be something we'd bring to you as on the triennial review and ask for your help in prioritizing.
Thank you.
I wanted to say, Lita, that you know, we've talked about this a bit in the past, but the translation policy, I think, is really important, and I really support the development of a really robust and transparent translation policy that lays out procedures, so then our staff could use things. As you know, Title 22 is really an inadequate list. The MCL list has only got a few of the real compounds that you run into in the real world. And using then other published documentation, as we've discussed, like, you know, the March Act documents or federal PRGs or ESLs, there's a bunch of other really, really good published data out there. And having our staff to have those tools to allow it to be a transparent process, I think, is really key. So I think that's really, really important.
Good. Yes, we definitely share that. And it's the, you know, it's been the procedure of staff all along that they turn to those various, you know, published and established criteria for guidance in individual site development. So the question here is only how to provide the process that they use in one place in a transparent process so that everybody sees what it is that they do, rather than having to educate each discharger every time they develop a permit or order.
Yeah, and I think it makes it a much better process and transparent. I think it makes it a much more solid process and defensible. I think it also gives staff a much better footing from then to make their judgment and their regulatory decisions. So that's really good. Any other comments or questions at this point?
Okay.
Keep going.
Thank you. So I'm going to turn it over to Jeremiah Puget now. He, I know you have seen his face before. He's been here as a contract employee in the office for several years, but we hired him in January to work in basin planning, and he has taken over the phase two of this project, which had already been under development in the conceptual phases. So he's now going to be managing that project and tell you where he's at in doing that.
All right, thank you, Alita. I am Jeremiah Puget, environmental scientist of your staff. And we are on agenda number 9 now, item number 9 for the Basin Plan Amendment Update for the Implementation Plan section. So this is primarily focusing on what is Chapter 4, our implementation plans. And we are addressing groundwater and surface water protection. I want to put an emphasis on the groundwater part of this Basin Plan Amendment. And as Alita's accurate introduction, really want to acknowledge the previous effort that staff have put forward. The list is too numerous, but I would at least like to acknowledge Lauren Clyde and Holly Lundborg for really having a good foundation on where this is going. So I'm picking up the ball and taking it forward from here. So an overview of phase two is to do some cleanup, add an introduction and a table of contents, and revising outdated plans, as well as reorganizing the chapter, improving the readability and the accessibility of information within that. We propose adding a regional prohibition. We'll go into more detail about all of these things. An implementation plan addressing the discharges of waste to land, and incorporating the recycled water policy that was adopted by the state, and the elements, including the elements of salt and nutrient management planning requirements, and incorporating the septic system policy, the OTS policy. So as far as the edits and reorganization are concerned, again, we want to improve the readability and the accuracy of information, adding the table of contents and section numbers, an introduction that is similar to the basin plans that you may find in Region 3 and 6. While we want to add concise language to the basin plan, and it's important to not add more words than necessary, these sections, we think, are very valuable in defining our programs and defining the Clean Water Act and our responsibilities under the Water Code, and adding and kind of setting the stage for our implementation plans as we move along in the chapter. And we find that there would be great utility in doing that. There's also some editorial revisions to some of the outdated plans. The plans for spills and contingencies would be one, where the agencies have changed and the process for that is no longer accurately reflected in our basin plan. Another one would be the action plan for the city of Santa Rosa that is as kind of sunsetted, and we are handling them through different regulatory mechanisms more than that action plan itself. So really trying to march through there and provide a bit of cleanup. We want to try and organize the chapters into a clear program base for point source and non-point source, as well as proposing to move TMDLs to their own chapter, their own section, perhaps at the end of the chapter, or their own chapter entirely. So the regional prohibition, aka the Klamath discharge prohibition, would be an addition of a regional prohibition of the discharge of waste in violation of water quality objectives unless otherwise approved by the board. Now, the purpose of this is to support the attainment of ambient water quality conditions and protect against serious and significant unpermitted discharges. We're proposing to, as I mentioned, it was first adopted in the Klamath River watershed, and it broadly supports groundwater protection and non-point source efforts, and is one of the mechanisms that we use, permit prohibition and waiver, and propose adding that to a region-wide status. Another big component of this is the implementation plan to control the discharges of waste from land disposal activities. The need for this is to describe the procedures staff use, a little bit of the clarity that we have talked about for the translator policy, adding the procedures that staff use when developing waste discharges requirements, or waste discharge requirements for the discharge of waste to land, And the existing basin plan is relatively silent right now on this process that staff use in assessing this. And so the proposed amendment would outline how staff approach the source identification of wastes, the characterization, and then the assessment of the potential impacts to water quality. And a third component of that section would be the production of guidance fact sheets for industry-specific issues that we find time again that staff are dealing with to add a bit of an educational component. Separate from the basin plan, it won't be in there, but it'll be guidance fact sheets that we can post to inform the regulated community. So we'll talk a little bit about the recycled water policy and how that integrates into our plan for discharges of waste to land. And we'll be promoting, the goal of the policy is to promote the use of stormwater, recycled water, and promote water conservation while managing salts, nutrients, and other constituents of emerging concern. The policy anticipated that stakeholders would lead efforts to development of all these plans through, as was mentioned, the 62 basins, and currently we only have one plan in development. We'll talk a little bit more about that. But as you are aware, there's been effort at the regional board level and communication with the state board to request an alternate framework for the North Coast region because of our uniqueness in this situation as compared to the rest of the state, and that we'll be developing an alternative approach. In this process, we'll be developing a risk-based approach for the basin prioritization through the compilation and collection of existing data to then help us identify data gaps where we need to both prioritize efforts and prioritize assessment efforts. And through that, we'll be able to establish policy framework within the implementation plan that I previously mentioned. I really like to acknowledge the activities, particularly down in the area that we are right now with the city of Santa Rosa. It's unique in the way that we should really appropriately recognize their contributions to the protection of water quality and water resources and beneficial uses. And the city of Santa Rosa has led a collaborative effort with a variety of stakeholders and local municipalities in the area to develop a salt and nutrient management plan. And in addition to the efforts that the city has led, the Sonoma County Water Agency is leading a non-regulatory effort that we are now participating in for a kind of technical expertise and consulting in a way, as they are developing that management plan with objectives of water conservation and the protection of beneficial uses, and would really like to recognize their efforts in leading the development of such a program that's so comprehensive. It provides a nice model and framework for us to use elsewhere. Another large component, as we've heard already several times from folks today, the on-site waste treatment system policy. The purpose of this policy is to ensure properly functioning treatment systems, septic systems, and the protection of health and the environment and statewide consistency. It was adopted in June of 2012, and it became effective just last month. And so if we look at the time frame here a little bit, you can see that it's the expectation of the state board that the regional boards will adopt this and amend their basin plan a year from now. So the next steps, and what we are actively doing right now, is reviewing our existing basin plan language, our existing policy, and the state's policy, and looking at the things that we believe we need to retain for our regional flexibility. We need to put a little emphasis on certain areas, as well as a particular example would be to maintain the existing prohibition on the use of holding tanks. Staff has identified this, our core regulatory staff has identified this as one of the higher priorities for us to retain in our policy. So we are working through this in discussion with the State Board as well. It has a modified role for the Regional Water Board and the local agencies. I believe Charles Reed has provided a pretty good summary to you folks in the past about this, so I'll keep it brief. But what those changes mean is the participation with the local counties, and are they going to develop local agency management plans? What is our role, and how is that going to also change then with the adoption of total maximum daily loads? And as you are aware, this policy specifically states that the septic systems in the Russian River will continue to be regulated under our existing policy until we adopt the TMDL for the Russian River, which may have some refinements embedded within that. So the next steps is to refine our project schedule. Take a close look, because as you can see, this is a pretty chunky amendment, and it's obvious why we had to split it off into two phases, and this second phase itself has a lot of work to be done on it. So we're going to reassemble the project teams, and each individual who's already been involved in the past, we're going to continue to communicate with them and work on drafting the basin plan amendment language, as well as conducting an environmental analysis, including the compilation of data region-wide to know what existing conditions are to help provide a bit of the baseline, too, for this, and continue to always conduct stakeholder outreach, communicate with our local municipalities and partners in that area, prepare the substitute environmental document, do some workshops, and bring it before you for consideration. So with that, I'll turn it back to Alita to provide some closing remarks, and then we'll have some questions.
This would be a good time if you have any questions about phase two of this amendment, and then we can open it up for public comment.
Mr. John Corbett.
It was mentioned that a provision water quality objectives would be adhered to unless approved by the regional board. The general rule is those are adopted by us, adopted by the state, adopted by EPA. And I know not that it's gone forward on trying to get expedited restoration project procedures, the only way to get a waiver, and that was considered very sensitive with EPA, was to actually have specific provisions in the basin plan to provide for that, and that's pretty much a fundamental safeguard. So was that just awkward wording, or what do you have in mind for waiving water quality objectives that are in the basin plan by the regional board?
This isn't a waiver. The prohibition that was adopted as part of the Klamath TMDL is now just specific to the Klamath, and it says, though probably not verbatim, but something like the discharge of waste in violation of water quality objectives is prohibited unless otherwise authorized by the board. And the meaning of that is that unless you have a permit, unless the board has issued a permit for your discharge, you cannot discharge unpermitted anything that would violate those objectives. This is sort of the general understanding of how we operate. We implement the water quality control plan, but it's nowhere stated explicitly.
Okay, well, it happens to be in that basin plan that's approved. I think it would be good if you just sent me that language, and I want to confer with legal counsel on it, because I have some concerns, and it seems inconsistent with prior EPA policy, although they approved that in that document as well.
Well, just to be clear,
I'd like to check on it.
Okay. Just to be clear, it is not a waiver. It's a prohibition. It's meant to address unpermitted discharges. So where we have the ability to enforce permitted discharges if those discharges are operating in a way that are not in compliance with the permit, but we don't have an ability to enforce independent of a permit the water quality objectives. And so this prohibition establishes that you can't, without a permit, you cannot discharge in violation of those objectives.
I understand that, but it's worded very awkwardly. Let me put it that way. Maybe that's a way to solve it. It's just...
Yes. Okay. Any other questions?
Any other questions or comments? So then timeline, just to be clear, timeline, because Jeremiah, you indicated, we're kind of going along here. Just can you lay out just a kind of perspective timeline? What do you think this comes back and time frame-wise? Because you've got some things to do on both phase one and phase two, I understand, but you've got a lot of pieces and parts of this thing. So just kind of generally, what are you guys thinking?
So phase two is in total probably something like a two-year process yet ahead of us. The piece associated with the on-site waste treatment system is intended under state board policy to be incorporated into our basin plan by May of next year. So that would be 1 year. And so one of the things that we'll be evaluating shortly when looking at the project schedule is with whether or not it makes sense to peel off the on-site waste treatment system policy piece as yet a third phase and do that sooner rather than later so that we can meet that state deadline. But all totaled, the work associated with phase two is about 2 years.
And again, to be clear on the on-site waste treatment process, it's a bit cumbersome, right? Because we have an existing policy which is going to hold for the Russian River until it's amended by TMDL, and then in the meantime, what you're saying is that this process will amend the rest of the region to be consistent with the statewide policy. And then once a TMDL is adopted, the Russian River system itself is regulated pursuant to TMDL, which would then kick out the old and replace, I assume, the new.
Yes, that's right.
Okay.
Well, the new as maybe augmented by TMDL.
Correct.
Action plan.
Correct.
Measures. So, right, so that's part of our decision-making over the next couple of months as we look at the project schedule is related to the timing with the TMDL and whether it makes sense to get well ahead of that TMDL or to become more in lockstep with their schedule so as to do a more coordinated amendment. So we'll come back at another time and update you on where we've gotten with that.
Okay. I don't see any more questions. I have a couple speaker cards. Why don't we take some speakers and come back? So the first speaker card I have, Nicole Granquist.
Good morning, Chairman Noren, and the rest of the board. My name is Nicole Granquist. I'm an attorney with Downey Brand. I'm actually here today. I normally represent the city of Santa Rosa, if you've seen my name on documents. But I'm actually here today on behalf of the California Association of Sanitation Agencies and their technical arm, their technical advisory committee, which is named TriTac. They have their large meeting today, which prevented them from attending. So I am presenting their points on their behalf. CASA is a statewide association of public agencies that provide wastewater collection, treatment, and water recycling services. And TriTac is a technical advisory committee sponsored jointly by CASA, CWEA, and the League of California Cities. CASA and TriTac do not routinely comment on matters within individual regions, though because of this particular action could have significant statewide implications and could impact how other regions approach amendments to their basin plans in the future, the associations felt the need to provide both testimony and written comments. As detailed in those comments, CASA and TriTac have several concerns with the approach being taken by the Regional Water Board. Most significantly, they believe the proposed narrative water quality objectives and the associated translation policy is inappropriate for several reasons. The primary essential items that concern them with respect to the translation policy, which quite frankly is the majority of, I think, most folks' concern with these amendments, is that the nature of the actions needed to achieve that translated objective, the feasibility or ability to take on those actions, the economic impacts of those actions that are not being assessed within the Basin Plan Amendment itself, a time schedule for when various actions would be required, and how compliance will be determined. The primary concern is that you've got a very general narrative objective, which we understand Regional Water Board staff would like for flexibility to respond to a variety of conditions. We understand that. The problem is that the translation policy in and of itself is so broad that it is very difficult to determine on a prospective basis what regulatory requirements will apply to a variety of projects or circumstances. And that's where the primary concerns lie. Implementation of the policy will leave the dischargers without input into the regulatory process and unclear how their discharges will be regulated under the narrative criteria. And CASA believes the policy fails to provide permit writers with sufficient guidance and the public for establishing appropriate and reasonable numeric requirements. Finally, as currently written, the proposed translation mechanism could allow any guidance document to be used as a water quality objective or goal in a regulatory setting. Using that as a de facto water quality objective and not providing for a process within that policy to decide what numbers are really appropriate to perhaps grab from other regulatory programs and import them into a water quality objective is a serious concern. There are a variety, as you mentioned earlier, there are a variety of sources of a variety of different types of standards and criteria developed under various regulatory approaches, whether it be DTSC, whether it be ESLs, whatever it may be. And some of those may be appropriate to use in a water quality setting like ours, but some of them aren't. the assumptions that go into some of those numbers are important. It's important to understand what the assumptions were, what they're used for in those programs. And to the extent it's appropriate to import them into this program, there are circumstances where it will be. But there are circumstances where some of those assumptions need to be incorporated. What we're looking for is some way that the amendment and the narrative take that into consideration and provide a process and a procedure and an outlet for that discussion so that we're not coming to you at a permit adopting or an enforcement order or whatever it may be and arguing here about whether or not the number is right, because at that point it's a little too late. We want to be able to have the discussion earlier than that and have it at least recognized in the process in using that translation policy that process can be adhered to. Obviously, CASA represents public agencies. As you well know, their public agencies, including the state, are suffering from serious economic strains. So not having the ability to prognosticate what numbers might apply in given circumstances makes it very difficult for them to take on long-range planning processes for innovative programs that we would both share the desire to accomplish, but it brings a certain level of uncertainty. Also in terms of assessing perhaps existing or historical issues or problems, maybe a groundwater cleanup, maybe whatever it may be, the idea of being able to understand what regulations are going to apply, what numbers are going to generally apply, so that folks can plan for that. It's important. And that's where public agencies really struggle, because as you know, they have difficulty in raising money quickly to respond to something that might be an ever-changing regulatory requirement. Despite the significant concerns with the policy, CASA and TRITAC do applaud the Regional Water Board for undertaking the effort to amend the basin plan. It is the foundation of the board's water quality regulatory program. It's extremely important, and we understand it needs to be updated from time to time. That's not our objection. We strongly encourage the Regional Water Board to convene a group of interested stakeholders to work with the staff to develop revised amendments that address the concerns that we've identified and serve the board's goal of clarity and certainty as well as ours. These types of stakeholder efforts have been successfully used to develop basin plan amendments in other regions, including Central Valley and Santa Ana. So we appreciate the opportunity to be able to put in input. We do also appreciate the opportunity to talk with Regional Water Board staff and their attorneys. They have been responsive. We've had a few meetings to discuss our concerns, and we do appreciate them listening to those. Thank you.
Nicole, thank you. Yes, I think that the process of choosing or determining, I don't want to say choose, of determining water quality objectives that get written into permits needs to be a transparent process.
We agree.
I agree with you. As you said, and I think as I said earlier, there is a wide range of regulatory documents out there that provide an even wider range of numbers from which you can determine or choose, a number based on something. And it's my desire, as I stated, I'd like to see our staff use a process that is transparent, that is also equally defensible because of its transparency. So I share much of what you said. At the same time,
it sounds
like you are working within the process, and you and your CASA are engaged within this process of working with our staff. I think from what I heard from our staff and discussions from which we've had earlier, is that they had anticipated having an adoption hearing today, and I think they realize they've got some work to do. So I would encourage the participation of yourself and your agencies, or your membership, I should say, to be part of that process, because I think it makes a better process.
Absolutely, and we appreciate being part of that, and we're committed to work with you on that.
Fantastic. Any other questions? Nicole, thank you very much for coming today.
Thank you.
Thanks for your comments. Appreciate it very much. Rita Miller.
Good afternoon, Chair Noren and members of the board. My name is Rita Miller, and I will be providing City of Santa Rosa perspectives and concerns regarding items 8 and 9 on your agenda. First, the city would like to thank the Regional Water Board staff for holding an informational meeting in April to discuss the draft basin plan amendments. Given our shared goals, the city strives to enhance and support communication and collaboration between our two agencies, so we appreciate board staff and council's willingness to listen to our questions and concerns. As reflected in our prior written comments, the city is particularly concerned about the draft basin plan amendments related to narrative water quality objectives and the beneficial use designation process. If the draft amendments are adopted, beneficial uses will no longer require designation, and will be decided at the time of each regulatory action. Water quality objectives will be vague, open-ended statements that refer to an implementation policy authorizing board staff to pick a number from a variety of sources. These sources may not be appropriate to use in the context of a Clean Water Act or Porter Clone Act regulatory action, and without the socioeconomic analysis first required by Porter Clone, should not be used. Thus, the draft amendments appear to sanction a case-by-case approach to water quality regulation, with the city having to speculate as to the requirements we will need to attain and maintain. The city operates state-of-the-art treatment facilities and produces high-quality recycled water that is beneficially reused in cutting-edge water reclamation projects encouraged by the state legislature. Some level of regulatory certainty and predictability in the regulatory process is crucial for the city to continue identifying and implementing novel and beneficial water-related projects, as well as for our long-range planning. Without it, projects will become more difficult to envision, design, implement, and fund. We ask that we not be placed in a position where a project planned or built must be unreasonably enhanced or abandoned because of continually changing regulatory requirements. We are also deeply concerned about how the draft amendments might be used in enforcement actions against the city, for which we've been a target. For example, if discharge prohibitions or receiving water limitations generally reference or require compliance with water quality standards, which are not clear, our gauge for compliance is uncertain and opportunity exists for creative interpretations as to the meaning of those or other provisions. For these reasons, the city requests a different approach to the basin plan update by actually designating, where appropriate, new or different beneficial uses and adopting more specific, tailored water quality objectives associated with those uses. This would support our shared goals of transparency and clarity in the regulatory process, and we would be interested in participating in further discussions with your staff if that would be helpful. Thank you for this opportunity to provide comments.
Rita, thank you. Comments or questions?
Yeah, it seems like your concern, the way I'm reading this and what I heard from staff, is that their goal is to clarify the process by which narrative objectives are used and translating them into numeric objectives. And so what I'm struggling with is that it seems that I'm hearing that the city is concerned that the process is going to be going backwards and it's going to be more leave more room for subjectivity on staff's part. But what I'm hearing from staff is that you're trying to actually do it the opposite way around. Can you maybe, is that true? Do I understand that correctly? Because there seems to be a little bit of disconnect. And what I heard from the staff presentation, maybe if you could clarify that, maybe it'll alleviate some of your concerns.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Yes, thank you. So I think that it will be useful if we set up a meeting to talk specifically about some of these concerns. I think there's some misunderstanding that can easily be resolved. You're correct that the goal of this amendment is to provide a more transparent process for how staff translates narrative objectives into numeric criteria. I think part of where some of the confusion has come from is that the original proposal was to eliminate a table in the basin plan that actually has numeric criteria mm-hmm. for chemical constituents, and to replace that with a general chemical constituent objective that refers to Title 22 in the MCLs, doesn't list them specifically, but allows us to look to Title 22 for those MCLs, but also reaffirms that MCLs are really the maximum level that we use for the protection of municipal drinking water in terms of chemical constituents, that far more often, in terms of our existing basin plan, we rely on a single footnote that says that we can apply more stringent criteria and policies. And what we're trying to do is be more explicit about how we interpret that footnote. So the idea is not to provide, not to do away with existing designated beneficial uses. Those would remain. There's no proposed revisions to beneficial uses at all as part of this amendment. So we would apply beneficial uses exactly as we always have. But we describe in that translation policy the
the logical process, the step-by-step process that staff uses when determining whether a more stringent criteria than the MCL is appropriate. But clearly we have to do some more outreach, and we need to refine that language to be a much more crisp.
Right, and you said that that was in the initial draft, and you're going through that revision right now, and so perhaps some face-to-face time would help, you know, get a little bit closer to where their concerns are as potentially proposed, and you can narrow it down.
I think so.
Great.
Yeah.
Thanks.
Thanks for that clarification. I have one last speaker card for Virginia Porter.
I should say good afternoon, Chairman Noren and members of the board. I'm Virginia Porter. I'm the executive director of the Russian River Watershed Association. So I'm here today representing our 9-member agencies from Ukiah to Cotati. And all of our agencies are regulated by this board, and we would be affected by the proposed water quality objectives basin plan amendment. And so it's specifically to item 8 that my comments are focused. I realize that RRWA is kind of sort of late to the game. We've come in relatively late in the process, and we only recently became aware of sort of some of the nuances of the proposed amendment that could affect our member agencies. So I very much appreciate an opportunity to give public comment today. I also appreciate that the work that's been going on between the City of Santa Rosa, the stakeholders, and staff to look closely at the, you know, the work that's going on. First, I want to state that the Russian River Watershed Association does support the comments provided by Santa Rosa, the oral comments today, and their written comments from earlier in 2013. We appreciate the rigor that Santa Rosa has taken and the concerns that they've articulated, and these concerns are shared by RRWA's member agencies. We have a particular interest in seeing the amendment modified so that it's more clear the process whereby the objectives will be defined. I think it's much like what we've talked about today, where there's more clarity in the translator policy so that the narrative objectives can have, there's some level of prediction for the regulated entity, even a range of options of what might be the outcome in the actual water quality objective. We're concerned that the narrative water quality objectives coupled with the translator policy would result in this case-by-case determination of objectives that could make it very difficult for a city to carry out sound planning, project development, and policy development when they don't have a range of certainty about what the water quality objective might be. I just want to mention that when our members took a look at this, that we have specific concerns for some of our smaller cities like the City of Ukiah, the City of Healdsburg. The impact of the uncertainty gets magnified, for example, when the customer base supporting the NPDES wastewater compliance or the population base of the general fund supporting the NPDES stormwater compliance is just intrinsically smaller. And so they run their own systems and they have those concerns. So we want to join with Santa Rosa. I think we also support CASA's comments and very much support your staff's decision to revisit the Basin Plan Amendment and to, we hope that they're able to undertake an approach that creates more predictability, some level of certainty for the regulated community and being able to evaluate how water quality objectives might be determined. So thank you much.
Virginia, I don't think you're late to the game at all. I think you're right where you should be. I mean, from the standpoint, it seems like we have a process in mm-hmm. play. I think that it's incumbent upon the regulated community to talk to our staff. I think that's what we're looking towards. And I think there's going to be more to come on this. So I appreciate your comments and the your association's comments and concern. And I would ask, again, to participate within that process. I don't think you're too late. I don't think it's something we've left, and we don't need to revisit. I think we're actually visiting it now. And so come on in. Let's do it.
Thank you.
Okay. So can I ask you, can you guys come back up for a brief moment, please? I think it's so interesting that the basin plan, it demonstrates the power of the basin plan. It demonstrates the power, actually, of words. A narrative objective is very powerful, and it's it is the end product of the Basin Plan. It took me a while as a board member to realize the power of the Basin Plan. It is the regulatory foundation from which we go forth. And I appreciate the thought and care you guys have in this process. And it sounds like the process is in play. I think, you know, echoing what Board Member Hales expresses that, you know, sounds like there needs to be some dialogue here, and I think you've received that today. So as this process goes, update us on how it goes, and we will go forth. I think also similarly, Board Member Corbett asked some questions, which he asked for some information as well. So I think that within that process, it sounds like you have a path in front of you, and I think it's, while it's not maybe crystal clear, it at least has some guidelines from which you can, and some participatory parts that not only regional board staff, but then some of the regulated community and interested parties can also participate in. So it sounds like you're going. We'll see you again in the future.
You'll see us again. Thank you very much.
It's an important process.
Yes.
Thank you very much.
Thank